everyone. Welcome to We Hate Movies on the Sideshow Network. Thank you for tuning in, as always. This week, guys, I think I'm in love.
He's back.
I think I'm in love. It's 1989's Blind Fury, directed by Philip Noyce, starring the delicious Rutger Hauer.
Him, capital H.
Yeah, he is back. The Almighty.
The best.
And I'm telling you, this is the closest I'm coming on this show. Like, we're over 200 episodes now. This is the closest I've come to trying to figure out what we're doing here. I think this is a totally great movie.
Yeah, it is. I had
so much friggin' fun. I had to get up a busy-ass schedule the past couple weeks. We had a lot going on. We had the Gilbert interview was just recorded yesterday, which, by the way, you can pick that up if you haven't checked it out yet, our interview with Gilbert Gottfried. So, you know, busy. I had to wake up at like 6 o'clock this morning to watch this movie. I don't think anyone's ever had to wake up at 6 o'clock in the morning to watch a Rutger Hauer fucking ninja movie.
No one.
But I did, and it was a great way to come up with the sun. This movie is an American remake of Zatoichi, The Blind Swordsman. So already you're working off of fantastic source material.
Do they actually credit it?
Oh yeah!
Oh great!
It's a direct.
It's a direct.
Remake.
I mean, yeah.
That was obvious. Yeah, I'm just surprised they actually gave them their due.
And I mean, as good as it is, and I am in agreement, is it's a good movie. But like, let us not forget, it is crazy nonsense.
Oh, it's fucking ridiculous.
So this is probably the most fun I've had since I don't know. Pray for Death, maybe.
Yeah, in that vein.
We got a cast connection here.
Excuse me? The dude
from Pray for Death and Enter the Ninja and all that shit.
He's the final guy, right?
He's the dude at the end of the movie.
Oh, right.
Yeah, dude.
Hey, cool.
Eric, hey, cool. I don't read cast notes.
Eric just had the look in his eye like he found out the date he's going to die.
I actually did. Simultaneously to both those things.
Fucking what's his name? Sho Kasugi. Or Koshugi. I don't know how to say it. But that's the dude.
Awesome, yeah, that's awesome.
He once made you pray for death, and then he got the shit kicked out of him by Rutger Hauer.
Somehow.
Fucking loving it. Loving this movie.
Yeah, so, our title of the show, we're not always that negative.
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
You're starting it off with a little bit of a Vietnam flashback.
That's where you want to be.
Indeed.
But this is a weird, like... We're just doing this, like, dolly shot through this war zone, and it's just fucking corpses everywhere, and I didn't know what this movie was about. I saw the clip where he, like, spits the rock at the kid's head, and that was it. So I had no idea what this movie was.
But that's a big selling point.
Oh, well, sold me on the movie.
It's a huge selling point.
Eric was like, I want to do Blind Fury. I was like, what's that? He sent me that clip. I was like, doing it. There it is.
I grew up on this movie. I've seen this movie, like, 10 times.
Oh, really?
Oh, God. Oh, yeah. Sometimes I envy the weird cable TV raised lifestyle of Eric Siska.
It was a wild time, man.
Yeah, it was just like we just had the wrong hours. You were watching the hours where all this shit happened, and like,
yep.
I was like watching Shawshank 100 times.
Yeah. Well, you guys were watching, Hogan's Family. I was watching this bizarre shit on Cinemax.
See, that's the thing.
It's the Cinemax that does it.
I definitely didn't have the movie channels as a little kid. That's why I've got all the fucking ridiculous TV knowledge that I don't need. We're raised on TV.
Yeah.
Just TV that nobody needs to remember.
I know a lot about movies with shirtless men fighting each other.
Nothing wrong with that. And that's what we're getting in this movie. So Rutger Hauer, you know, we're going through... what I didn't know until later in the movie was it was because, like, a little mortar had gone off and blew the place to shit. I could have sworn I saw, like, a helicopter crash. And I was like, oh, like a chopper went down or some shit.
Well, I think it was just, isn't it just the sounds coming from the radio and it's like also overlaying with what was happening in the past or something?
Right.
But is that what's going on?
Yeah, because it's a crashed, it is like a blown up bunker is what it is. Right.
They use, this is the same set they used on the Twilight Zone movie.
No, that shit got torn down.
Salted and everything.
Yeah, was that a set or was that like real jungle?
I don't know. I guess it might have been real.
Either way, torn down.
Salted the earth.
What happened was real, anyway.
It was, indeed. Much.
That's when the movies got a little too real. But so he realizes, you know, you get to Rutger and he's like crawling around on the ground and you just hear him say like, I can't see anything. and he kind of like futzes around, and he's walking. He's blind. He's clearly blind. Yeah. And he hits this tripwire and gets pulled up in a net. And I'm like, how's he getting out of this?
Yeah. Well, the Ewoks have got him this time.
Oh, let's eat him. It's the weird Ewoks that speak English.
Yeah. Oh, God. That's terrifying.
It's the fucking pre-Jedi Ewoks, man. It's sheer terror. No subtitles necessary. So I'm just like, all right, like he's finished. But instead, he's like, you know, brought to a village or whatever. You cut to him, he's got like leaves over his eyes. Someone's taking care of him. And I'm just like, how is he not being murdered?
Right. Yeah, he would have totally been murdered.
Oh, yeah. He would have been, you know, sliced and diced.
You don't see the fact that he's like rescued by kindly villagers.
Yeah.
You know, you don't see him getting out of the thing. It just cuts to him with like shit over his eyes. And I'm like, you have to show like a little kid come out of the forest and be like, oh, I'll get you down or something like that. Because you get pulled up in a net in Vietnam, dude, you're done for.
Or like, unless it's like a lost tribe. Or so, like some crazy thing where like this village has been isolated. They don't know about the Viet Cong.
Well, I mean, they very well might be the way these people. I mean, like they're out of the way.
They do seem oddly untouched by the conflict.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, they kind of like they're kind of fucked up people. Like they
because what? They don't have dirt bikes and cars.
No, because like the tests of strength is cut in a squash.
Well, you know, that's like basic training. That's like level one.
Yeah, but no, but it's what the master does. That's what your final thing is cutting the squash.
Listen, dude, having to be blind and you have to stand in a room and hear for someone tossing a squash across a room and successfully dice it, that's fucking advanced level shit. Right?
I guess.
Impressive. Let's see your ass do that.
Well,
doubtful.
I'm not blind yet.
Well, I'll fix that shit.
This is like Daredevil.
I mean, this movie is like a ninja Daredevil. It's pretty much what's going on.
It's so great. Yeah.
So these villagers start training him. Because I guess it's they realize like, okay, this guy's blind. He's got a hard road ahead. The least we can do is train him to be a ninja assassin.
Yeah, it just swordsmanship. It's I'm, you know, I don't know too much about culture. But
sure.
But I'm wondering,
just in general, like all culture,
Vietnamese,
Vietnamese.
Oh, excuse me, I didn't realize I was podcasting with Ho Chi Minh.
I didn't realize I was podcasting with Larry the Cable Guy.
Well, you always are. He's always there, the specter.
The specter, the chicken smelling specter is always just hovering above.
Oh my God. Well, I was just wondering if they have this, I don't know, if the swordsmanship would be similar to what they're showing on the screen. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, and also it's weird too, like why are Vietnamese people training him to be
like
a ninja samurai?
It doesn't make a lot of sense.
Maybe they're like a lost Japanese group.
Well, that's why I buy that it was just like some, you know, random tribe in the middle of Nam, and they just picked him up. They thought they were getting a hog or something.
Well,
but
there is
like,
get ready to eat, kids. We caught ourselves a hot. No, fuck. It's a blind white guy.
Rutger Hogger.
I guess it would depend upon like how hungry they were.
Yeah.
It's like, all right, can everybody suck it up and eat this guy? Because I'll fix it.
Well,
I'll
I think that's what they cut out of the movie, and I kind of would have liked that.
A little touch of cannibalism?
Well, no, just like a couple of guys, you know, the elders of the tribe being like, look,
yeah,
we could eat them, but, you know, that's just, what's that going to do? 1 day, 2 days for our entire...
That's true. You know, like, eat a fish, you got a meal, teach a man to fish, he eats forever.
There you
whatever
go.
The fuck that saying is.
Yeah, I think, Jesus.
Who's that guy? Oh, yeah, Jesus. I butchered that Jesus quote.
Well, if it wasn't Jesus, it was one of his pals.
Yeah, somebody in his crew.
One of the dudes who wrote Jesus's lyrics, but crazy people still say that Jesus said
Which apostle of Jesus is his turtle?
Oh, man, it's got to be maybe Paul.
Paul, I was going
to
say, yeah.
Paul's the one you want to go to.
Really? Was he a crumb bum? He founded the church, didn't he? Or was that Peter? Wait, no, Peter's got the gates. Let's move along. We're ignorant about Christianity.
Listen, Catholic school whipping boy Steve Zadek is not on this episode. Dude,
yeah, he doesn't.
To let us know which apostle would have been Jesus's turtle,
and which one would have been the crumb bum.
Well, first of all,
Jesus's turtle goes hand in hand with Jesus's crumb.
I suppose
it's
that's
the
true.
Same apostle, whichever one it is. Yeah.
Right?
Maybe Peter. All right. So we get like this training montage. You know, it's like not only will we teach you to walk around, we'll teach you to like defend yourself, and
yeah.
Because also, it's not just like swordplay and whatever else. Because you know, he's just an army guy. Like they have to train him in like martial arts.
He's building his senses.
Yeah, you know, his rank is army guy.
You know, he's building his senses.
Right,
he's
how to live as a blind man.
Yeah, you know. He learns swordsmanship by like hugging the guy.
Yeah, it's kind of like in like teen romance movies where it's like I'll teach you how to shoot pool.
Yeah, yeah.
Sexy lady, yeah, and like the dude like bends that. Over, you know, to like you just got to like, put your arm like this. Or it's also used a lot with golf. More dangerous right. films, maybe this is how you shoot a gun sexily. Just here's, you know, another one, aiming a bow and arrow.
That's a big one.
That's all over the Hunger Games, sexy bow and arrow instruction.
That's true.
Oh, yeah.
That's how you flirt. So hey, this guy, take this weapon with me.
So this guy's flirting with Rucker Howard so long that we flash forward to Rucker Howard having a big old beard, and it's great.
20 years. Well, not yet.
Not yet. But
right.
But he's still deep in the jungle, and he gets that big blonde beard.
But he's like a regular in the village now. They stop. Yeah, yeah, yeah. They stop yelling out like, "Hey, white man."
Yeah.
It's like, "Oh, there's Fred."
Yes.
Right. Exactly.
He's a regular. You know.
Parker is his name, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and eventually, so yeah, we get like the final thing. There's a crowd of people around, and someone hucks this squash or whatever, and he slices that thing up good.
And he graduates, so they send him back to the
USA. Who wants to roast root vegetables?
Yeah, no, exactly. The prize is you just eat that thing that you sliced open.
It's dinner.
We do not know how he gets back to America. We just know that he does. It's 20 years later now.
He doesn't get back to America for 20 years because he's presumed dead.
Oh, no, I know that, and he was on the wall and whatnot.
Right, right.
Wow, yeah. So he's fresh off the boat here?
Well, it's a little wishy-washy. I don't know.
I'm just assuming in that tribe they also gave him, like, Nightcrawler powers.
Oh, sure.
Yeah,
why
not? You mix that up there. They knew all the ninja skills.
He's got the power to, like, run around like a scumbag filming dead people in car. Oh, you meant the X-Men. Oh, I'm sorry.
Yes.
Oh,
not,
I'm sorry.
Not Jake Gyllenhaal. No.
I'm sorry.
Not, you know, play with murder scenes. No. So, no, not Rutger.
So he's just walking on the side of the street now in Florida. And this soundtrack, this score, this, like, 80s. Twangy 80s.
The Hard Target score reminded me very much of.
Yes, it is like roots fart rock.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
you know, that's kind of where we're at. And
it's got a little bit of a twang, too.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, it just tickles your ears because
it's
like
so
southern
synthetic
rock,
too. It's got that synth to it. Oh, yeah, dude.
It should be like the law that all music is made like this.
I agree. I would.
Let's
co-sign
pass
that.
Some legislation.
Let's do it.
So then, after we've been watching this blind man learn all these skills and, you know, really be able to, you know, make something of his life, now has a lot to work with.
Yeah.
Now begins just blind man jokes, and we start with him almost stepping in dog shit.
Yeah, he walks right over that dog shit, though. It's pretty great.
And then almost angering an alligator.
It's kind of great because this alligator is very cartoonish.
Yeah, it's just sitting there, and he's just like, oh, thank you, doggy.
Yeah, he's like, good doggy. You know, because he hits it with his little walking stick, and the alligator's just like, hey, good doggy. And he steps over it.
Hey, I'm just tanning here.
On the side of the road because Florida.
Yes.
Yeah.
Always because
Jesus,
Florida.
What a fucking death trap. And he makes his way to a restaurant and he sits down and he's getting himself a burrito. And this is now there's blind man jokes. And then the other thing in this movie is fucking with blind people.
Yeah.
Which I do not and I've never understood this. I've been around blind people a ton.
And you never fucked with them?
I've never fucked with them. This is the thing in movies all the time, in TV, where it's like, the wave your hand in front of the blind person, flip off the blind person.
You've never done that?
No.
I'm kidding. I never did it.
I'm a fucking human being. But it's just, I don't like the fascination with the blind kind of like someone, and it's with the blind because, like, you know, you don't see in movies someone's like, oh, that guy's deaf. And someone sneaks up behind that person and is like, like right behind them, you know.
Sure.
But with blind people, it's
not a lot of people die behind deaf people.
Yeah, I realized that was the Chucky scream. But, you know, no one's ever like testing the deaf like that in movies that much, but blind people all the fucking time, waving hands in front of faces. You're really blind, buddy? Are you really blind?
Well, that's what like everybody does it in this movie. It's like every other scene, even the fucking kid does it.
No one is believing in the blind.
The kid is the biggest offender.
Oh, my God.
And we'll get there, but let's talk about these burrito bags.
First, yeah, first.
Because they're douchebags.
With this hot sauce fucking prank they pulled,
now,
man.
Let me tell you something. I don't get offended by much in movies, but squandering a burrito for the purposes of an offensive, insensitive prank really steams my clams.
Yeah, you do not mess with a burrito.
He's got a delicious
sacred
burritos
thing.
Yep. You know what? Burritos, tacos, and quesadillas, as far as I'm concerned. You don't go near them.
I'll co-sign that legislation.
Thank you.
Write your congressman.
We can get the Senate on board. We've got this.
They can't agree on important things, so let's send him shit like this.
The House just passed the Iran nuclear test. We can do whatever we want, man. We can get these burritos in.
Well, I don't know. With the Republicans controlling things now up there, I don't know.
I'm not going to let you pass legislation about Mexican food.
Yeah, they're going to try to deport our burritos.
That's sad. I don't
want
to think about
that. We want
That's
amnesty
sad.
For burritos.
Yeah, we want
So this poor burrito, right? Like, he's about to bite into this delicious burrito. And this asshat comes up, and he's just like, oh, hey there, buddy. You need some hot sauce on that burrito. And it's like, you know, here's mild or fucking, you know, rat poison. And he's like, oh, I guess I'll take mild. Thank you. And the guy, of course, puts in the super spicy. There's a skull and crossbones on
like
it.
A bowlful.
Yeah.
Drowns this thing.
Like pure cap or something like that. And then Rucker Howard takes a bite, and it's like, you know, and all these dudes start laughing their balls off.
What the fuck is wrong with you?
Just laughing.
Yeah.
And then he turns it, though, because he's a badass, and he's like, oh, actually, it's a little mild for my taste kind of a thing.
And he finishes that fucking burrito.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's awesome. And then so, like, they start messing with a lady, and her purse goes flying, and he picks it up, and they're like, give me the purse back, blind guy. And he's like, no, that's okay, and beats the shit out of these dudes, Daredevil style. It's awesome.
Yeah. It's pretty great. And he does the stumble, like he's pretending like he's stumbling, but he's beating the shit out of people.
Yes, it's the, I'm going to like mess with you, like a little bit of like drunken master.
It's like, almost like a Jacques Tati move. Like he's just kind of like, oh, did I do that?
Whoa. He flops out of a folding chair and kicks someone in the teeth. It's so awesome. And that's when that's the moment when I was like, oh, it's this movie. Oh, absolutely. I'm on board. I'm on board from burrito scene one.
Yeah, man.
With this movie.
But we don't got any like big cuts with this fight.
No. He's not even using the sword yet.
No, this is just like a staff at this point.
He's on his way to Meg Foster's house.
Right, so he rolls up to the old Foster residence and
now did she date Stallone or Schwarzenegger?
Does it matter?
I mean, they are. I guess they are the same thing.
I have no idea.
I think she did, but...
I would wager Sylvester Stallone, just because I think Arnold was married to Maria Shriver for a very long time. But I have no knowledge of her dating either before.
I was just thinking of...
I don't know her dating history. I mean, she was in movies with Roddy Piper.
No, I remember just
Dolph
reading,
Lundgren.
Like, when I was reading trivia about her at some point.
Oh.
I read something about one of them.
Oh, yeah, I don't know.
But she's in Lords of Salem, is she not? Is she not the witch in the main...
Yes, I do believe that is Meg Foster.
And I wanted to do a shout-out for Lords of Salem because it's the best thing in
Yeah, I'll keep plugging
whatever,
that movie
yeah.
4 years on. What the hell? Yeah. It's great. He's got a new movie coming out that it already has distribution. It's not even made yet.
Oh, really?
It's called 31 or something like that.
Oh, because he was going to do The Blob for so long. Never mind. Let's get into it.
Someone else is doing The Blob because Sam Jackson just got cast
as
the main
character.
Oh,
yeah, I did see that.
Get this motherfucking blob out of my motherfucking movie theater.
I think it's Simon West, by the way.
Oh, is Simon West directing it?
I think it's a Simon West movie.
I see. So he goes to Meg Foster's house, and he's, you know, he's looking for renowned character actor Terry O'Quinn, who I've been noticing early on in movies is being credited as Terrence O'Quinn.
It's a Terrence O'Quinn.
And he is mustacheless in this movie, and you can fucking keep it.
Goodbye.
He's mustacheless as John Locke on Lost, but like when I think of like Terry O'Quinn in anything else but Lost, I'm like, he's got to have that mustache.
Yeah,
he's got a mustache when he plays a character. He plays a super soldier on The X-Files in season 9, but he's also in The X-Files movie as a different character.
Look, if he's not going to have a mustache,
right,
just get David Morse.
David Morse is the mustacheless equivalent of Terry O'Quinn.
That's what you
need. You're getting the same caliber of excellent older man character.
Well, you know, I'm glad we're getting to the bottom of something.
Dude, we hate movies. Clearing up questions. Left and right. So he's like, hey, I'm looking for your husband. And she's like, well, we got divorced and he lives in Reno.
Right, Mr. Yes. Devereaux.
Yes.
Devereaux.
So she's like, you know, come on in, war buddy.
And don't we, before this, see him being hung from a building?
Oh, he is being dangled Suge Knight style.
Right. Yeah, like a casino with this evil Western businessman. Mr. Devereaux, you're going to cook us that meth.
And the guy who has a name, but his nickname's Tex, and I've just always called him Tex, who's in every movie.
Oh, yes.
I just know him as Tex.
Tex Cobb or something?
I don't know.
Ty Cobb? are we talking about the gentleman that plays the bounty hunter in Raising Arizona?
Yes. Slag in this movie.
Slag.
Yes.
Slag it is.
Slag it is.
Right. He was also in one of the Naked Guns.
It's the third one, maybe?
In prison?
I don't remember. He is in a Naked Gun movie. Yes. Yeah, he's all over the place. Yeah. Tex whatever.
Tex. I'm just calling him Tex.
Yeah.
I'm pulling up the internet ticker.
Because you can't take it.
The thing is, so the other side of this movie is Terry O'Quinn.
Chris Cabin and Randall Tex Cobb.
Oh, really?
Ah, I said Cobb.
Well, the powers combined right here.
Dude, we are Captain Idiot. Our powers combined. So, yeah, the whole thing is Terry O'Quinn's kind of been, like, held captive by this drug lord and forced to do, like, Heisenberg work.
Yeah.
So it's like
fifth season. And it is blue, by the way.
It's blue. It's totally blue meth.
Blue meth. This is the Breaking Bad.
Stole it.
Yes.
Ripped it right off.
Completely.
I'm sorry, Vince Gilligan. I love you, but let me see your VHS copy of Blind Fury.
Right. You're signed.
Honestly,
VHS.
Signed by Terry O'Quinn.
I got to say, guys, this past week, I feel like Vince Gilligan is not all he's cracked up to be.
Why? What else happened?
He came.
What else happened to you this week with Vince Gilligan?
He came in third on Celebrity Jeopardy.
Oh, wait. You said he got housed by someone who he shouldn't have?
Neil Flynn.
Neil Flynn,
yeah,
huh?
Yeah, from the janitor from Scrubs and the guy in the middle.
Oh.
Yes.
Yeah.
For those eight people out there watching the middle.
Yeah, I believe he's a Second City guy.
Yeah, he's a big improv guy.
You might remember him from The Fugitive.
Given Sean the Fugitive. Of course I do.
Which, did What's-His-Face direct The Fugitive? No, he directed at least Clear and Present Danger.
Philip Noyce, yeah, he did Clear and Present
Danger. All right, yeah.
I think Patriot Games as well.
Getting my Harrison Ford movies mixed up. So Terry O'Quinn's being held captive in the penthouse of a Reno casino, and he's being forced to cook blue meth.
Oh, it's not a penthouse. It's like a janitor's closet.
But it's on the penthouse level.
It's the janitor's closet on the penthouse level.
Yes. And he's cooking that sweet, sweet blue dream.
He's getting visited by this showgirl who comes into this movie for no reason.
Well, I think she's his girlfriend, actually.
Is she?
I think that's what led to believe.
Okay. Yes, I think, yes. Because they sort of hint that they live together, even though he's been fucking kidnapped and put in this janitor's closet for most of the movie.
This is what happens when you're a chemist in America.
Exactly, dude. Exactly.
You better look out.
Unless you want to go work for Big Pharma.
Right. Yeah, you either make boner pills or you make fucking
blue meth for some Reno tycoon.
Yeah, both are totally blue. And what is the The kingpin's name here, MacReady or something?
I think it's MacReady. It's almost always MacReady.
Yeah, well, it's also sort of a vague drug trade, except the situation is he's terrible at being like a kingpin.
He's awful at it.
And he's in debt to like other mafia or something.
Well, he's like the loser of the group. Like
it's
on
so
the,
awesome.
On the strip.
Yeah, MacReady, by the way.
They are making fun of him at all the big like union meetings that they've got.
Well, let's point out, first of all, not for nothing, we're in Reno and not Las Vegas.
Oh,
okay,
yes.
So, you know, Reno, if
well,
you...
even for shitty, I mean, we'll get to it, but even for shitty casinos, this place looks like a Denny's.
Yeah, you're getting home fries wherever you turn.
It's really gross, but anyway.
So we cut back to Florida, and it's like, you know, yeah, we got a divorce. He talked about you all the time. His picture is still up. Oh, by the way, you're presumed dead and you're on the Vietnam War Memorial wall. You know, all this stuff. And they're just kind of chatting, catching up. The shit-eating kid comes in. And this is the kid, by the way, played JT on Step by Step.
Really?
And we have talked about this kid before because he
Whoa.
Was... Yeah. Because he's also...
He's been a piece of shit somewhere else?
Yeah. He's the piece of shit. He's the kid in Ford Fairlane.
Wow.
That the Dice Man adopts at the end of the movie.
Oh, my God.
That's this guy.
Oh, my God.
Interesting trivia about this kid.
Please.
While shooting some season of Step by Step, he was involved in a traffic incident where he was shot in both arms.
What?
How does that even happen?
I don't know, but he thought it was a great idea to put this on his IMDb profile.
What?
That, and yeah, and he dropped out of acting, and he's, like, working at a gas station.
That he, is- wait, wait, he- In his IMDb bio,
yes.
he updates says that he's in a gas station.
It's a gas station owned by his parents.
Wait a second.
So says his IMDb bio. So,
why would somebody update that?
I'm saying...
I don't know.
Leave it a dream, man.
That might be true, but it's not him putting it up there.
Yeah,
it's people.
No, it was some mean person.
Yeah, people that hate his guts, some townies.
Oh, I saw JT from Step by Step working at a gas station. Better go update IMDb. If that's the case, that person's the biggest loser on the planet.
Yes.
Yeah, they're out there.
Updating JT's IMDb profile.
Oh, they're out there. They'll do it.
So anyway... You know, there's a knock at the door, a little rat-a-tat-tat, and these two police officers just barge into this house, and I'm like, well, that's fake police. Like, yeah. It's clearly fake police, because, like, and here's the thing. If you're dressing up like a police officer, as a criminal, if you're dressing up as a police officer to, like, fool somebody.
Also, great idea.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Try
well,
wait, it
out. Are they not? I thought they were corrupt cops.
No, I think... Well,
I think they're phony baloney police officers.
I think they are phony baloney, but okay. But there is a chance. There's always a chance that they're a corrupt cop, because that line.
I mean, it could. I mean, it just could be the bad acting. I'm not gonna. I'm not gonna tell you it couldn't be.
Yeah,
that.
You know what? It might be the bad acting, but you know, well, you would think if it's a trained police officer, even if he's crooked, you're gonna come to the door. You're gonna do everything right. You know, yeah. You're gonna be. Right. How Joe Pesci pretends to be a cop in the first Home Alone.
Exactly. And I guess you're not going to be followed by a cigar-chomping fucking stonehead.
Yeah, you're not being followed around by a man named Slag. Yes, that's correct. And so they really aren't great at, like, keeping the facade up for very long. No. Like, they barge in, like, where's the kid, bitch? And she's like, what? And they're like, we need to talk to your son. He may have been witness to a crime. And she's like, oh, okay. I thought you called me a bitch for a second. And, you know, they're looking around for the kid. And then Rucker Hauer, like, smells evil on these guys.
Oh, yeah.
The thing here. And, you know, it's all, like, what seems to be the problem, officer? And then, again, not keeping up the facade, in runs Slag. And he's just breaking in. And so, like... Rucker Hauer assumes, or she assumes, that he's a detective because he's wearing this cheap suit and he's not dressed like a police officer.
Right.
And they get into it.
Oh, my God. And
this is where, if I was like ever, if an ounce of my soul was on the fence about this movie, oh, this scene hammers it home. Because you realize his walking stick is also a sword.
And you realize Slag is actually shooting Meg Foster with a shotgun.
Yes. Dude, that's how this thing kicks off. It's like, oh yeah, shotgun. And I'm like, oh, Meg Foster's in this movie. That's cool. Nope, not making it
out
of this
scene.
Not
for long.
Dude, we're not even at like 15 minutes. She's blasted
cameo
away.
Cameo performance.
And the cops are like, hey, man, we didn't sign up for this. But the blind man is a witness to the crimes.
And I think even they are doing the little wave across the face thing.
Oh, everyone's awful. Oh, by the way, jeez, did we mention that Billy flips him off?
Oh, yeah, right, the kid flips him off and before he grabs all this, his hand.
That's how he's announced. That's how you announce your secondary character, man.
Yep.
I'm a shithead.
Yep. This kid kind of sucks.
Oh, yeah, big time. So anyway, that kid's already gone. And here we have three guns pointed at Rutger Howard, and he's got his walking stick, and he's pulling it up. Oh, boy, what comes out of that?
Sword Town. We're going to Sword Town.
And what happens? Completely severs one of these cops' hands.
And what's awesome, it's like muscle memory of the hand.
Yeah.
The hand fires the gun post-severing.
Yeah, it's on the floor, and it shoots a bullet. Oh, God, it's great. And then he just slashes these other fuckers up.
Oh, man. The one guy gets, like, jacked up against the wall, and Rutger Hauer, like, just pulls that up a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
Just that, just get that sword right up into that rib cage. This dude's dead instantly.
Oh, yeah, well, dude, no, all those bones
that's
are
what I. The second cop is hilarious to me because first he gets him up against a wall and he, like, does the old, like, back forth thing.
Yes.
Like, and
Chris just acted it out for everyone.
I acted it out. I don't know why I did that.
I wasn't even looking, so I still have no idea. Oh, do it again. Oh, yeah, old, like, I'm going to slash one way and then slash the other way across
it's
your chest.
The under-upper.
But because, but because, like, they don't, like, it's a, the uniform is, like, dark blue, you can't see blood, so it just looked like he was having a heart attack suddenly.
He's like, Yeah, no, he's not having a heart attack, though. His insides are falling out onto the floor.
No, because he comes back out for him.
Slag,
because
no, the second cop comes back out.
Oh, before he gets jacked up against the wall?
Yeah, after that he comes back.
Oh Jesus, what and is he gets fucking like T-1000?
No, he gets like the you know. Well, I'm gonna do the movement again. Where?
Oh right, he takes the sword and like Rutger Hauer does the cool
under
like
his
he's
arm.
Not even looking oh, and yeah. like shoots it backwards. That's what you're and right. That's when he gets the guy. Oh, it's all awesome, you guys.
It
it's all
fantastic.
Awesome. Don't
was,
worry
it
about it.
See, it's,
pretty
you
wonderful.
Know it's. It's so awesome, it's confusing, because there's a sword flying around, you don't know what's happening.
The fight choreography in this movie is really impressive.
It's great.
This it's is better really, than, really well done.
This is better than your Age of Ultrons and all your other your other fighter movies.
Let me tell you something. This movie cost $180 million less than the Age of Ultron. Action scenes you can follow.
Yeah.
Like, I liked that movie, but I'm not getting dizzy watching Blind Fury.
No.
I know where every character is at all times on the screen, where they're standing on the you know the set.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of miss the back in the old days when I could just watch a you know a 40-year-old man hit someone with a sword. Instead, I got to watch a green monster get punched with a space arm.
Do you also miss big band music?
Sometimes, if it's a raucous evening. I've had a couple drinks.
Eric really misses the year 1998. That fucking big band revival. Oh,
cranking the Vitrola.
Man, what a time to be alive.
Back then, man, when I was traveling around following the Brian Setzer Orchestra across the country.
So anyway, Meg Foster's dying words are like, my ex-husband's in Reno. Yeah. Take the kid there. Avenge me. Dead. And I'm like, wow. Adios, Meg Foster. Thought we had more time with your beautiful gray eyes.
Well, but now we also know that, like, so, you know, Terrence O'Quinn
yeah.
and Rutger Hauer were in Nam together, and, like, he was the one that...
Yeah, Terry O'Quinn's kind of, like, responsible for the blinding for
yeah,
some reason. I didn't understand that.
He's, like, he was a complete coward, and then he got blinded?
Is that what happened? Terry O'Quinn, like pussied out about something?
Yeah,
and
that's
Rucker,
what it sounded like.
Right, they
lost
were,
his
they
son.
Were, like, juggling a grenade or something. And
That's not what happened. It was a sneak attack.
Right, well, yeah, and...
grenade juggling.
They were playing with phosphorus, you know, the flares. They were just joking around with
I
one
was
another.
Trying to show them how cool it is when you burn certain compounds and they make different colored flames.
No,
and then I just lit gunpowder on fire.
No, seriously, I could put it in my ass. Come look closer. And that's how it happens.
You had to
oh,
pass
man.
The time somehow.
If you blind your best friend in war by lighting a fart on fire? That's embarrassing.
It's probably happened.
That's shameful.
I would. I mean, I think, yeah.
They got to take you to The Hague for that.
You know what? That's a dishonorable discharge.
Yeah, I think that's. I don't think The Hague necessarily.
Dude, yeah, well, can we just all stop for a second and acknowledge the dual joke that was dishonorable discharge? Yes.
You're welcome, everyone. Thank you. Actually, I'm going to leave now on a high note.
So Rucker takes this kid and, like, the kid kind of just goes quietly at first. Like, all right, fine. He's like, where's my mom? And he's like, don't worry about that now. We just have to get going. And the kid's like, all right, we'll pick this up again later.
Oh, sure, stranger.
And then, you know, we proceed the first of many scenes of people riding on a bus in this movie. We're on public transportation an awful lot in this movie.
And there's a thing where he almost gets... busted by a cop, but then, like,
because the kid's making a scene in the bus station, and this police officer comes up, like, hey, is everything right over? Oh, all right over here? And Rutger Hauer, like, touches this dude's chest, and he's like, sure is. And he feels around for the badge, and he's like, officer, like, if you're not wearing a badge in that situation, right, and he's feeling your chest, I'd be like, all right, blind guy, I get it, but what are you doing?
I'd be like...
what are you feeling around for?
I'd be like, yo, if someone like Rucker Howard did that to me, I'd be like, I'm in my apartment's not too far from here.
Feel like the you prom know? Queen for once.
Yeah.
So probably the most famous scene in this movie, I guess like internet famous, is... because this is the scene that sold me on doing this episode.
Yeah.
They're at a bus stop. Or the bus is, like, you know, pulled over, taking a bathroom
break. Yeah, they've gotten
on
the bus. They're on the bus to go to...
we're taking a bus from Florida to Reno, Nevada, by the way.
That is a long fucking ride.
Yeah, listeners not familiar with American geography, Jesus Christ, that's a long time to be on a bus.
And yeah, they don't account for it in the movie.
No, not really. All of a sudden...
again, Nightcrawler.
Yeah. All of a sudden, it's like now leaving Alabama, and you're just like, Jesus, that's already...
that's
like
really...
fucking 20 hours on a bus.
And you're on a bus. Like, man, the smell.
Yeah, a bus coming from the swamp of Florida. People eager to go to Reno, Nevada.
Yeah, it's not good.
Plug it up, Bruno.
Smell-o-vision.
So, man. Oh, so we make a pit stop, and you're refueling or whatever's going on. It's pouring rain outside. And Rutger Hauer slips in the mud. And you're like, Jesus, that's embarrassing. This poor, you know, blind guy falls in the mud.
He takes it hard, man.
Well, what's great is the kid, like an asshole, is laughing at him, and then this kid eats shit too, which is awesome.
Right, because the kid then runs out there, and he fucking face plants on the dirt.
It's amazing. It's just what this kid had coming.
Mm-hmm. And then he starts crying. And,
and that's what, no, you know what? There is no sweeter treat for me in a movie than when, like, a shitty kid who's being a dick about something, like, goes to, like, be arrogant in some way and hurts themselves or whatever and then starts crying. No, oh, yeah. Oh, who's so tough now?
Doesn't
little kid?
He trip him? Who? With the cane.
Oh, does he really?
He does. Oh, I didn't notice that.
Yeah,
does he?
Yeah, it's like a little like fuck
dude.
You,
swift justice.
This ninja shit, man. Blink and you miss it. No, this is some great stuff.
Yeah, totally. Were you watching this on like a quarter of the speed?
No, I was watching the movie.
He was slowing it down to catch the night crawling.
I like that.
This is where he teleports.
The verb is night crawling. By the way, I think that's fantastic.
Yeah.
To catch the night crawling.
And then the kid says something about, oh, God, he says that he might get pneumonia, but the way he pronounces it, do you remember that? It's like,
no, what does he say?
Ammonia or something.
Ammonia?
Oh, Jesus.
Maybe I was drunk, but I think that happens. And then the kid does this is the famous part, man.
He picks up this, like, gumball-sized rock, and he's like, okay, hey, they gave me a piece of candy. Want it? And he's like, yeah, okay. And, like, Rutger Hauer... at this point, you've been blind for 2 decades, okay? If someone's going to give you something to eat, like, don't open your mouth like a baby bird. Like, put your hand out.
At the village, maybe they fed him like that.
Oh, I guess that could be. But, yeah, actually, you do see him being fed by the villagers, hand to mouth.
But also, this kid's been nothing but a piece of shit to you.
Yeah.
Like, from beginning to end, and I understand it's a kid and you have to be understanding and everything, but, like, why do you think, like, really, honestly, even if a kid's, like, been a shit to you this whole day, and then all of a sudden it's like, hey, here's a piece of candy.
Yeah, the shit tap has not been plugged just yet. So he puts a rock in Rutger Hauer's mouth, and then Rutger Hauer pretends to swallow it, and the kid's like mortified. And then he spits it back at him and nails him right in the noggin. Oh, yeah, take that, kid. Take it. Once again, eat shit. JT, you little monster. God, it's awesome.
I mean, in Andrew's defense, this kid is pretty obnoxious in this movie, and he's really overdoing it.
And you know what's kind of weird? Like, they're just getting on that bus covered in mud.
Yeah.
Gross.
Yeah. It's really, really gross. And I mean, again, you're in... That's a long trip you still got ahead of you. Because this is just in Alabama, right?
Or it's like right when they cross over. It's not specified, but... Yeah. Odds are they still had a long way to go.
A long time and a lot of not washing to do.
So there's a little bit of like a flashback thing going on. Not a flashback so much as like... He's like, so you were friends with my dad, and he kind of goes into it, like, you know, we were friends. Oh, no, it's literally a flashback. This is where you see what happens.
Right.
And he's like, you know, yeah, your dad and I, like, met in basic training, we were fast friends, blah, 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 blah. Then, you know, we learned we were coming home, or whatever the situation was.
It was the night before they were going to go home.
Right.
Yeah, and 2 days away from retirement, from Arby's.
And, like, it's really, like, they're treated as, like, really like assholes. Like, they're setting off fireworks in this fucking like this tiny bear. Like, I'm sorry, you're in Vietnam still. Like,
yeah,
I know tomorrow is the day, but like really, like setting off fireworks and stuff like that, and like, not to say they deserve what happens here,
but so someone throws a mortar in and the place goes to shit.
That's why I thought they were juggling grenades. Okay.
Well, yeah, it was, they were playing a little grab ass in the barracks
grab ass with
and,
fireworks.
You know, that's all.
Yeah,
that's all. You know, just tossing fireworks around like you do.
Yeah.
And then... so they pull over. See, this is the thing. This movie, little bit of a lag, like not a slow start, but a little bit of a lag once we get going into the second act kind of a thing. Because we're just making another pit stop. And this is the pit stop where the kid gets out and he's like kind of buddies with Rutger now. And he's
Of the story kind of bonded them.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
The story did exactly what it was supposed to do. Made this kid fall for it. But so he's like, he runs to a payphone, and Rucker like hangs up on him, and he's like, "Hey, I gotta call my mom." And he's like, "Your mom's dead."
Well, it's amazing. He goes down. He's like, "Look, Billy, I got something to tell you." And then they do this crane shot like it's the end of The Majestic.
That's a good reference.
And like he goes running off. He goes running off into the cornfields.
Yeah. So all of a sudden we're North by Northwesting here for a little bit. And this is when Slag and this is what I appreciate about Slag. He does not outsource his goons. He hires local talent.
Oh, that wasn't the Suicide Squad?
It was not the Suicide Squad.
The truck full of hillbillies. I was certain that was the Suicide Squad.
Who knows how that movie's going to turn out, but if Tex Cobb was in it, I would be more excited.
Oh,
I'd
be way more. Him as the gator person.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, of course.
I'm Gator Man or something. Well, they got Killer Croc.
Killer Croc, that's what I'm thinking about.
Oh, that's what you meant when you said Gator
Man.
Oh, okay. So we're running through these cornfields, and this is what I appreciate about Slag. He's hiring the local talent.
Yeah.
Because, he's a big Reno so-and-so. Of the, you know, of the Reno mafioso.
And we don't even know really how he's tracked them down.
It is completely not explained at all.
I imagine it's kind of like Wildling calls. Like, he just goes into like the middle of town and just does like a wah.
Right. And then all the other hillbillies.
Yeah,
like,
hillbilly call out.
Yep.
Oh, I saw a kid.
So all of a sudden, the banjo is flipping the fuck out, and we are hillbilly hunting this kid in the cornfield. And Rutger Hauer, again, just using his hearing powers to daredevil these people. He tricks a dude into shooting another dude. Awesome.
Yeah.
Then just straight up murders the other guy. Really? Oh, this is the guy I think that he jams it in and then pulls the sword up, thus cutting him in half.
Yeah,
there's a couple of those as we'll get to the end of this.
I mean, it's just amazing.
He fertilizes those crops.
Oh, Jesus.
Because when you die, you also shit.
Yes.
Double, too.
Yes.
Yeah.
There's a weird moment where we cut back to MacReady, and it's like so Slag messed up or whatever. This guy's a ninja or something, boss. And he's like, then get me Bruce Lee. And this guy's just like, Bruce Lee's dead. And he's like, all right. Well, get me Bruce Lee's brother.
A martial artist, perhaps, sir? Yeah.
You're just like, Jesus Christ, MacReady. Come on.
Bruce Lee's brother.
Yeah, get me Fred Lee. Take this guy out. So we make it to Reno, like, after this cornfield incident. And then they're instantly kidnapped by Nick Cassavetes and another guy.
Oh, by the way, this is my favorite. Nick Cassavetes is Lyle. The other guy? Tector.
Oh, Tector, yeah.
Tector is this name. Tector is the name.
Lyle and Tector, it's a reference to some big Western movie that I can't think of right now. Lyle and Tector are characters in other movies.
Oh, are they?
Yeah, but, you know.
So we got a shared cinematic universe. Huh?
Oh.
I think that's what we're led to believe. Blind Fury and whatever movie, I don't know if it's Magnificent Seven
and the Naked Spur.
So they put the kid and Rutger Hauer in this van. Yes. They're kidnapping them. And this is, they got Nick Cassavetes, this dude Tector, and then the lady friend.
Yes.
Showgirl. I guess she was used as bait or something. I don't really remember what the situation was.
Like, she's staying at this house. I think she is bait. Like, I think she's just like to get them in the door.
Right.
But I don't like again, they don't really make it clear exactly what her relationship to Terry O'Quinn is. Like, she just kind of like goes in and says hi to him once.
Oh, it's a Wild Bunch reference.
Oh, yes. There we go. Thank you. Yeah, Lyle and Tector are Wild Bunch people.
So, they have all three of them. And so in the back, are the kid, Billy, and Parker.
Yes. And so the sword gets through. This is an amazing trick that Rutger Hauer's character pulls off here. Because the sword gets thrown out the window. And Rutger's just like, start counting.
Yeah.
Count out loud. And the kid's like, okay.
But did we notice before then that two things. One, Lyle cuts his finger and makes...
Oh, grossest line I've heard in a while.
Makes the show gross. What's the line?
Lick my wound.
Ugh.
Like, he cuts his thumb, and then he's like, hey, baby doll, I'm bleeding. How about you lick my wound?
Also, check your ear. AIDS.
Yeah.
Oh, God, yeah, so she's got it.
Yeah, like...
And meanwhile,
it gets worse, though, because she does it.
Yeah.
And then he's like, she starts biting him, and he's like, oh, fuck yeah, harder. Oh, yeah, baby, this is fantastic.
Like,
and
poor
Tector's just driving this van, like, I didn't sign up for that. Fuck that.
I know, I mean, we're brothers, but, like, man, no.
No, you promised me no wound licking.
Thankfully, by now, Rutger Hauer has freed himself of his chains. And it started to set shit on fire in the back of this truck.
I love this. Like, just the sheer not giving a shit about how you get out, just so long as you get out the van.
Yeah.
They're like, how are we going to get out of here? And he's like, just start stuff on fire. They'll figure it out.
Hey, Billy, did you hear about what happened in Waco, Texas?
I'm gonna caress these motherfuckers.
You want a blaze? Let's make a blaze.
So this van's on fire, and they pull over, and they open the door, and this kid's hitting him in the mouth with a fire extinguisher. They're getting the foam all in their mouth, and then, like, he chucks it at Nick Cassavetes and knocks him unconscious. What happens to the other guy? How's he get knocked down?
I think Rutger Hauer had knocked him with the door.
Oh, yeah, that's a good move.
And then they grab the car... The van. They grab the van, and now the woman's driving, and they have to turn around and go back, and he makes Billy count backwards,
yeah,
to get to the point where, you know, they can find the cane.
Yeah, he stopped at like 34 or something like that, and he's like, "All right, stop the van, and we're just gonna get out and look for this." And then, you know what I would have appreciated right here? This is where, like, why are we going back for this sword? Little bit of sword backstory. This movie's only like 86 minutes long.
Yeah.
I could have used, like, you know, 4 minutes of sword backstory. Like, I got this from the people that rescued me in Vietnam. Something like that.
Well, actually, I kind of like the training sequence. I kind of wanted more. I, again, like, I get it. Cutting the squash is quite enthralling. But,
dude, Let's see you do it.
I understand. I'm never going to have that chance.
Oh, yeah, you're goddamn right you won't.
I find cutting a vegetable to be the highest thing of martial art. It's just a little silly.
It was like that what happened to him. It was like a good rescue Don. I was like, no, that worked out for me.
This dude had no Little Dieter experience. That's for sure.
Well, yes.
That's for sure.
Yeah, he looked out there.
What would impress you if they hucked a fucking pig at him and he cut that in half?
A live pig?
Yeah.
Or maybe if they hucked Steve Zahn at him. Like he was another
Christian Bale just cut him in
half.
It's
like they made him cut up other POWs.
No, like I just want a norm like defeat your master type scene.
Right. Okay.
That's all I'm talking about. I'm not talking about nothing crazy here.
Well, that's what's sort of nice about this training thing, because like there's no clear cut master. It's all like the village coming together to be like, yeah, we're gonna help this guy.
Well, the one guy is training him. It's the one guy is the guy who is like,
well, you
with
gotta
the
have
sword.
A guy who's like managing the outfit.
So Chris, you wanted him to get to the point where he would strike down this master?
Yes.
Well,
and,
yeah,
and
now
and become the lord of the village. Then.
Oh, wow! He should never come home.
So then, like, they get the sword, and he accidentally steps on this woman's glasses. And at this point, these two hoodlums have stolen a car from an old lady.
From these old ladies, and that's a great moment because they're just like, "What?"
And then, well, no, it's awesome because this badass granny like stands up and picks up a. Pulls a like revolver out of her purse.
It's a god killer, man.
It's amazing.
It's right out of Dirty Harold.
And she's just like, suck this, dirt bags, and just like starts firing at this car and like blows out the back windshield. And I'm like, this movie's so awesome. Even the grandmas are kicking ass.
And then in the background, Sly's like, Mom, stop shooting.
Oh, man. What
so they, so this lady's like, okay, well, I can't drive without my glasses. And Rutger Hauer's idea is, well, I can. The kid'll just navigate. Cut to speeding through downtown Reno with a blind guy driving, which, hello, this movie, 1989, A Certain Scent of a Woman, 1992.
There's even more connections we'll get to later.
Oh, yeah.
But this scene is crazy because Lyle and Tector are now brandishing firearms, shooting at this van in broad daylight downtown.
Yeah, in the middle of day traffic.
So we're going through these streets, like, firing wildly. And it's like, I was kind of wondering, what's more dangerous at this point, the gunfire or this blind man driving a van through crowded city streets?
I don't know. He's almost like knocking this one guy off the road, and the guy's like, oh, hey, what are you, blind?
And he just looks. He turns, and he's like, as a matter of fact, I am.
And he also
the guy
says,
like, puts on the brake, like, go ahead.
Rucker Howard also says, what's your problem?
He's like, yes, I am. What's your problem?
Well, the best thing is that the woman, the reason the woman isn't driving is because she lost her glasses, and she's like, I'm blind without my glasses. He's actually blind.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. What, shit's going to be a little fuzzy for you? This guy's blind as a bat.
Oh, my God. And he does have sonar, so that does help a little bit.
A little bit.
But they come, like, inches away from, like, crashing into a brick wall, which is pretty hilarious.
Yeah, and it's one of those, like, Billy yells, stop! And then Rucker Howard slams on those brakes to the point where it instantly stops right before impact.
So they get away. They get to, this woman brings them to a safe house where there's, like, another friend. And now it's very smart what this movie does at this point, because this movie knows this kid totally sucks.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
So he's like, listen, hang out here on the movie sidelines while I go do some really cool shit without you. And I was like, oh my God, this movie has the brains to ditch the kid for a little bit. Awesome. And he goes to like the hotel where he knows, MacReady works and whatever. And
right. Denny's.
The casino.
It's the casino.
The Denny's slots.
Denny's casino and 24-hour breakfast.
Yeah, and you can get a room if you find a dame you like.
No bed.
Talk about a grand slam breakfast.
It's just a blanket and pillows.
I'm going to give you the moon over Miami. Oh, excuse me, my hammy.
There's a weird moment where he's sitting at a roulette table. And
oh,
they,
this is great.
They do a... did you guys notice this for a second? They do a special effect to, like, show you how he can hear them from across the room. Because, like, he's sitting at this roulette table. Yeah. And you see MacReady and Slag and everybody, like, way off in the distance.
Yeah.
And you can hear what they're saying, but it's, like, kind of garbled with an audio filter.
Yeah.
And as they, you hear Rucker Hauer, like, listening to them. You see him listening to them from across the room. And it's like, wah! It's like, all right, that's, like, his... He's got superpowers, this movie confirms.
Murdoching. Yeah. He's Matthew Murdoching.
And, you know, as they get closer, the, like, the effect wears off. You just hear them talking normally. They don't recognize him. They haven't met him yet. And he's just kind of gambling. And I don't understand... He's gambling for a really long time. He's made a lot of money at this roulette table.
He's casing the joint, man.
Is that what he's doing? He's just sitting there getting the lay of the land?
I think so. And it's like, I'm going to wait until, you know.
I'm going to build up my empire here.
Yeah, wait till I, you know, hear MacReady come too close or something. And, you know, then I'll strike or whatever.
And this is where we hear a little more about, like, MacReady's problems, where it's like he has to sell these drugs to get out of debt he owes on the casino because the casino's been losing a lot of money or something. Like, worst vague drug trade operator ever.
Oh, yeah.
It's amazing. And so they notice, like, oh, this dude's doing really well at the table. I think maybe this is why he does it, to like, get their attention or something.
Right.
And then he hears, like, this beeping thing going off, and you're like, what is that noise? And, you know, they're gambling and gambling and gambling. And the beeping is getting louder, and then Rucker takes out this sword.
Well, it's they change the guy.
A dude swaps out, right.
Yeah.
And so it's a new guy who's dealing or dropping the ball and taking the bets or whatever. And he hears the beeping, and he swipes at this guy's pocket, and a little, like, indicator thing is in his pocket.
Right, it says, like, the number it actually landed on.
Yes.
And then he uses the sword then to flip up the roulette thing, instantly exposing... The con, like in like two swipes of a sword, he exposes the fraudulent casino to everyone in the room.
It's amazing. Like, they have, like, a magnetic thing going on with the ball.
The ball, yeah.
So,
and this, it's amazing because what happens next is one of my favorite parts of this movie. It's a good old-fashioned casino flip out because everyone is just like, they're fleecing us! And everyone starts, like, flipping tables and
punching
grabbing
dealers.
Chip. Oh, my God. It's mass hysteria.
Yeah, chips are flying. And then Lyle and Tector finally catch up. And they're like, oh, what's going on in the boss's casino? they're just preoccupied punching random customers in the face.
Yeah, they got to punch their way through it, actually.
And he's also overheard the keypad to this, like, private elevator to get up to the penthouse or whatever, because he's searching for Terry O'Quinn at this point. He's heard, or the lady has said, like, they keep him up at the top floor. I haven't seen him.
He's somewhere in the building. The guy at the top floor knows where he is.
Oh, is that what it is?
Yeah.
And so he makes his way over there, and a couple of, like, bodyguards try to catch him, but it doesn't, you know, it comes to nothing. He gets to the top floor, and did you notice who one of these like beefcakes were?
Oh, I don't know.
The guy with the mullet, the Asian fella, is Tiger Chung Lee. He's the guy from the beginning of Red Heat that Arnold beats the shit out of in the snow.
Oh,
he throws out the window of the bathhouse and beats him to death.
Nice.
Same dude.
Makes sense.
Playing this bodyguard.
I love seeing that guy getting beaten to death.
And we're just getting more fights with these dudes and everything. And he finds Terry O'Quinn. He's locked in this room, this broom closet, making this mess.
Well, you missed him disarming these two guards. He gets to the fat man, MacReady's fat man.
Oh, right. It's like this. This is like a mini.
Oh, the older gentleman?
Yeah,
it's a mini boss in like a Texan hat.
It's like a Jabba Doo hut, but like.
I don't remember, though. What does he do to this guy?
He does he slices his eyebrows off.
Oh.
Yeah, because the fat guy, I don't understand this fat guy. Like, the fat guy logic doesn't work. He's sitting there. He's a lazy shit. And all he's done, he's got a gun. Don't get me wrong. He's got a gun.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But Rutger Hauer comes up to him, and he's, like, taking out his blade, and he's like, you're going to tell me where Terrence O'Quinn is.
Right.
And he's like, no, I'm not. I'm like, dude, no. Yeah.
Also, this dude has heard pray tell of the blind guy fucking with all the other hoodlums.
And I just remembered this is actually the climax of a scene where he's like kind of like it's they're kind of running back and forth at each other.
Yeah.
And Rutger Hauer at one point has to just run out of the room and like get away from everyone to regroup.
Yes.
And he's crawling on the ground. He's having flashbacks to Vietnam.
Yes.
And then we cut back to where he is crawling on the ground. And somehow he's gotten into like a musical equipment room.
He's in like it's a ballroom, and he's on the stage, and there's guitars falling on it.
But he's just crawling. He's crawling onto a drum set with a guitar on his back, making the loudest racket you ever heard. Like, what are you doing?
This is around the time one of the funniest, like most ridiculous lines in the movie is one of the guys goes, "I'm gonna put that blind guy in a wheelchair." I fucking lost it. So this is, it's pretty great because he's surrounded at this point.
Well, yeah. This is way, we're skipping over a lot of stuff.
Well, it's all just fighting and fucking.
Well, I mean, because they kidnap the kid and they kidnap the lady and they're like, and Terrence O'Quinn and Rutger
Hauer. But we're still at the hotel.
But doesn't the rock concert thing happen at the, that happens at the end. Because the fat guy that he just cut the eyebrows off of gets killed there.
Oh, I see. Well, the point about the eyebrows was he swipes at this dude's face, and you just see a fake pair of eyebrows just fall on the floor. Yeah. It's a good gag. This movie has a sense of humor about stuff.
No, yeah. That stuff was what like really drives it, I think.
Yeah. So in the spirit of how are we going to get out of this enclosed space, let's set this meth lab on fire. Terry O'Quinn's like dumping chemicals all over the place. He takes like the one box of blue meth, I guess for posterity. I don't really understand why he keeps it with him.
I think just to have like a coin in the game, like just in case, like because I mean, it turns out he does need it.
Oh, he definitely needs it.
I mean, so I think it's just good to have a chip in the game. I would do the same thing.
So they escape from the hotel and they go back to the safe house and he's like, "Your son's here. Don't worry about it." Yeah. They get in there. This lady who barely has a name, like the friend who owns this house, is just shot in the head. And the kid's kidnapped. And the lady friend
showgirl
is kidnapped.
Yeah, Annie.
And so it's like, you have to meet us at this ski resort for some reason. And I was like, skiing in Nevada? Like, where are we going?
I'm sure it exists.
What are you going up there to meet Matthew Amalric? Like, what the fuck is going on here?
Any good villain has a good ski lodge hideout, I guess. That's true.
It is the late 80s.
Well, there's a
there
weird
has to
thing.
Be a lot of skiing. That's
We're
true.
Going up on like the big ski lift up to the lodge, and we have the Terry O'Quinn and Rutger Hauer heart to heart, where he's like, Rutger's like, you know, by the way, I want to tell you, like, yeah, I was mad you're responsible for blinding me in Vietnam, but I got over it, and I'm a different person, but, you know, we're cool.
Like, the patience on this man. Like,
it's all practice. It's all thanks to those villagers.
I would have been so petty. I would have been
really?
Like...
Even if you turned into a supernatural being because of that experience?
I still think I have to give him one, like, good, like, fuck you, dude.
I mean, I think even Matt Murdock is still kind of pissed off that truck driver.
Oh, yeah. Really?
Yeah.
Oh, man. Come on, everyone.
I don't think Stick, you know, totally turned him.
Yeah. All right.
Terry O'Quinn mentioned something in the ski lift, too, about how he's made, quote, bathtub napalm. Good God.
Sure. Okay. Yeah.
That's something you want to be brewing at home.
Yeah, in a bathtub.
Some homemade napalm. Yikes.
I've made that in the toilet, not in the tub.
Well, it suggests that you're like so poor, you deal in napalm, but you're so poor you have to make it in a bathtub.
So the ski lift gets to the top of the thing and all the dudes are there waiting for them and they open fire on this thing, really shoot the shit out of it good. And Nick Cassavetes has another disgusting line where he's like, "That thing's got more holes than daddy's rubbers."
Oh, yeah. Oh,
and you're just like, oh, for the love of God.
Oh, man. Do we need his origin story?
You can fit it in here. Again, like I said, this is ASME. You want to fit in 5 minutes of figuring out how this guy with... Is it a sleeveless cowboy shirt? It is, isn't it?
Yes.
It's a sleeveless
Somehow
cowboy shirt.
We figured that out. My. It doesn't look... like homemade either.
No.
Someone tailored that shirt to look like
that. No, that's, you know.
That's intentional.
Someone paid good money
Idiot
for
Brother Co.
Yeah. Oh, man. But so, you know, I don't understand how they got out of the ski lift thing.
They go underneath. There's like a, like, I guess they went under.
I see how the movie tries to present that, but it is the tiniest little hole. Danny DeVito's not fitting through that hole.
Well, yeah, but he's a round shape.
Yeah, he's a little.
He's got
his
string being like Terrence O'Quinn.
I guess so, but they could have done a better job at opening up that floor.
I don't know how they're getting all their packs and stuff down there, too. Yeah, that's a little dubious.
You're dragging all the homemade napalm.
Well, that's as well.
Your bathtub napalm's on your person. You know.
Your little
Which he
junk.
Totally drops on the floor of this like people mover, and Rucker Hauer's like, fuck! And he's like, oh, no, don't worry about it. It's good. I got it. I'm sorry.
Really? Are you sure? You just told me that's napalm.
Which, and here's the thing. Rucker Hauer's got to be shitting his pants a little bit, because here's the guy who was a coward in Vietnam.
Right. Yeah.
And he's his number two for this final battle. And he's dropping napalm on the floor.
Yeah.
Right.
Get your shit together.
Maybe if that explodes, I'll become not blind.
Yeah, maybe
It's got to be the same guy who did it. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's a magic trick.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
But anyway, they get underneath, and now...
we're fighting in a hallway.
Fighting in a hallway. This is the best. This is because this is where his cowardice comes back into play. It's because they're both in the middle of this place, and like Lyle and Tector and Hank and Hulk and Jack and Dink and whatever the hell else.
Doink the clown.
Yeah, Dink and Doink don't leave each other's side. They were both there.
The Doink twins are there as well.
Well, they weren't twins. One was tall and one was a tiny person.
Dink
and Doink, the WWF wrestlers that were clowns?
Sure. No, but what was their relationship? Were they fucking or were they related?
Possibly both. It is professional wrestling.
Yeah, all right. It's an unwieldy backstory.
I think they were just circus buddies that liked a good wrestling match.
All right, fair enough. I mean, call it what you want. Just don't rub it in my face.
You know, I can live with blinders on too, Andrew. I decide not to.
Speaking of living with blinders on, Rutger Hauer.
But Rutger Hauer and Terrence O'Quinn are stuck in the middle of this hallway, and they're being like guns are going off. They cannot move. Terrence O'Quinn gets one move to go, and like Rutger Hauer's like, just go. But wait for me at this place.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
Because I need you to do this thing for me.
Yep.
And so he's like, okay, go. Go, go, go. Terrence O'Quinn just bails.
He just books it. He books it.
Again, like number two, I am shooting this guy when I see him next. It's that simple. Or like at least like a good smacking.
So this is awesome, though. So Nick Cassavetes has like, Rucker Hauer puts his sword up to his mouth or something. I don't really remember what happens here, but like I remember the sword in the mouth, and I was like shuddering. Like that was a real visceral reaction. Of course, he's just laughing, and he's like, la, 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 la. Oh, yeah, your sword's so fucking sexy. I'm a weirdo assassin guy. La, 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 la. Yeah, he's ready to die. He's ready to go to hell tonight. And he winds up tricking, or it's not a trick, but like Nick Cassavetes shoots Tector in the head, like through the cowboy hat. Is that what happens?
Right. Yeah, I think they accidentally take each other out, kind of. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because doesn't that happen? But is that at the rock concert fight off that we're at now?
I mean, it's that's how they die. Yeah. I don't know the order of killing, because listen, there's a lot of fucking killing.
Yeah,
in this
there
movie.
Is.
I think this might be where he goes on the floor. What I was saying earlier.
Yeah,
I'm sorry to be jumping around too much.
Yeah, it's a jumble. Oh, it's a jumble.
But because there's so much awesome shit happening, you cannot keep track of it.
Yeah, you cannot count the awesome in this movie. It's 86 minutes of pure gold.
But on the cherry on top of this, this like rock concert massacre that's going on.
that's a title for a movie.
The best line of the movie happens in here, because they surround him, and he stands up, and is it Terry O'Quinn who takes out the lights?
Yes.
So the lights go out, complete darkness, and they're like, where is he? Where is he? What's going on? And one guy says, like, I can't see him in all this darkness. And Rutger Hauer, like Batman, like sneaks up behind him and goes, that's where I live. And starts breaking necks with Gerard Butler.
Yes.
Just slicing and Dyson! Oh my god.
Oh,
he
so
takes
good.
Out like eight guys.
Yeah.
Tex, Butch, Dink, Doink, Fred, Fart, they're all getting taken out. Oh, it's amazing.
Man, he cut fart.
Laying waste.
Yeah.
And the pig who had his eyebrows cut off, he's the last one.
The pig.
And he gets his taint cut.
He's gutted.
Oh, yeah.
Bottoms up. Bottoms up, eyebrowless old man. Your intestines are falling out through your taint. It's crazy. It's fucking crazy. I mean, I've never seen an old man get murdered like this.
Oh,
that guy died 9 times in half a second.
I love it. It should happen more often.
So then MacReady comes back out,
it's
and he's like,
MacReady time.
So you think you've taken out all my guys? Well, I sent Slag.
The line, right before he says that, MacReady goes, "Well, well, well, Mr. Blind Man."
Again, you know what, MacReady?
Mr. Blind Man?
You can't get this drug operation off the ground. You can't keep a casino afloat. And you've got terrible one-liners. Worst villain ever.
Yeah, he's a pretty terrible villain.
Mr. Blind Man. Yeah, nailed him.
And this is where, like, listen, when you get the vague drug trade and you get so deep into that shit, and you keep on going to the top, going to the top, eventually a ninja shows up, right?
Yeah. It
happens in Marvel's Daredevil. It happens all the time.
Yeah.
Too much drugs going around, there's going to be a Japanese swordsman.
Because that guy's cleaning house because that dude's not fucking around.
Yeah.
So here Shogashugi comes in, and he's just ready to rock.
I paid a pretty penny for this.
Oh, yeah.
And for a show.
And we just get down to some fucking fighting. Oh, and it's great.
Oh, it's so good.
Fighting. Totally great. Oh, at one point, you feel like, well, this just might not come to anything, but like a wire falls down by this hot tub kind of precariously.
Mm-hmm.
But then all of a sudden, Rutger is standing up on the hot tub. And I'm like, is this the first movie where like someone has dangerously hovered above a hot tub? And long story short, Rutger dumps this dude in this electrified hot tub.
Oh, yeah, because this dude, they're sword fighting. This dude grabs a line from the ceiling and swings across the hot tub to try to get one on Rutger here.
Yep.
Rutger just cuts the fucking wire out from under him.
Yep.
Boom. You got yourself an electrocuted...
ninja.
Yeah.
Ninja Master.
Zap Town, dude. One-way ticket to Zap Town, and he is just electrocuted. Oh, man, is it great.
Fantastic.
And so now, because it's a video game, we've got the second-to-last bad guy, which here's Slag back in action. And Rutger Hauer, like, from across the room, throws a sword at him?
Yeah.
Badass.
He's done with it at this point. He's, like, killed Slag twice already.
And like, you know, Slag gets stabbed, he pulls the sword out, he throws it to the floor.
Yep.
Now we're into some serious trouble here. What is Rutger Hauer going to do?
And folks, let me tell you, new favorite villain death in this movie.
It's like he gets up like near a window.
Yep.
Of course.
Yep.
Cuts him right in half.
Slices him up. But this is what's great about how they do it. Slices him up. The force throws Slag out the window, and remember, everybody, we're on the top of a huge mountain, and he's fallen down this mountain, and just before he's out of sight, you see the little cartoon split in half.
And you want to get, if you really want to get angry at George Lucas.
Yes, this is exactly where it's from. This is where Darth Maul.
He gets Darth Mauled. He got Darth Mauled.
Yep.
This is where it's from. I don't give a fuck if you think he wrote those movies in the 70s.
It is almost exactly the same shot.
It's exactly the same shot. This is exactly where the Gobbler got the idea to do that scene. It's all so much is connected from Blind Fury. If we did not have Blind Fury, we would be an empty society.
I had to rewind it because it was early in the morning. I was just watching it on my laptop. I was so tired. I was like, I can't even hook the shit up to the TV. We're just watching it on the laptop. And I'd been like sipping coffee and just kind of distracted. And I was like, that motherfucker just break in half? I had to rewind it. And I was like, greatest death ever. But you're totally right. He gets Darth Mauled. Or rather, Darth Maul gets slagged.
Yes, there we go. Much better.
That's it.
Now, this is what I guess I totally fucking missed it. But what happens to MacReady? Because the next thing I know, we're getting ready to, you know, reunite families, and we're at the bus station again.
I thought he just got cut up. I thought it was a good old fashioned cut job.
Yeah, probably.
But is it before or after the slag murder?
Oh no, it's after.
Right, but I really think he's kind of like an afterthought.
No, he is. He totally is.
He definitely is an afterthought. Yeah, you know, maybe the fuzz picks him up. Eh, whatever.
I would like to think that he was also gutted in some fashion to keep the consistency with everything.
I'm sure he was.
But so we're reunited. You know, we're all getting on a bus. It's a big happy family. It's my two dads, you know. And Rucker Hauer's like, you know what? You got to work on building this family, you know. Like any good samurai, I'm just going to walk off, be on my own, be the lone wolf.
You
and
know
the
what?
Kid's like flipping the fuck out about it.
Yeah.
He's like, I don't really even know this guy. My parents have been divorced for years. Your Uncle Nick.
Well, fuck this. And Rucker Hauer walks off, basically. And this kid's throwing a tantrum, but I love you.
And like, how
I hate you. How could you leave me?
And like, dude, how? I mean, like, not. I mean, I'm sure. Yes, the kid. I feel bad for the kid. But like, Terrence O'Quinn is like, I lost my wife.
Yep.
I just like, I'm trying to get my life back. I was held captive, making meth for fucking weeks.
He is more like a season 5 Jesse Pinkman than he is a Heisenberg.
Yeah, yes. He's like burnt out, and now his shitty kid.
Oh yeah,
it's just like, I want Uncle Nick. Give me Uncle Nick. And you're like, so you know what? Fine. Go with Uncle Nick then.
Fucking Uncle Nick crosses the street. A bus comes by and he's gone. The best trick the devil ever pulled.
Well, but there's the biggest bullshit line in this movie is this terrible kid is like pouting down the street. And he's like, Uncle Nick, I hate you. Or no, what is it? It goes, Uncle Nick, I need you. I hate you. I love you. And I'm like, you know, someday, kid, you're going to get in a traffic altercation and someone's going to shoot you in both your arms.
Yeah. And then he throws his, like, toy dinosaur thing over the overpass.
Right, and Rucker Hauer's walking under it. And he, like,
I presume on water.
It's a repeat. Yes. It's a callback to the beginning of the movie when Rucker first shows up at the house. This he kid's catches, got this little dinosaur statue and he throws it out the window and Rucker catches it. And it's the same. He throws the same statue off this bridge like, I hate you fucking forever. And he catches it like, I'll always remember him by this shitty clay model he made.
I always when that happened, I pictured like 20 years from then.
Yeah.
Rucker Hauer is going to come into the dusty old town, visit this kid working at that gas station his parents own. And be like, look, I kept it after all these years. Uncle Nick was always with you.
And this kid's just like, who? He's strung out on meth. I don't remember you.
Do you want, like, a pack of Lucky Strikes for it?
My real dad's Patrick Duffy. And my stepmom was Suzanne Summers. You guys ever watch that show?
What?
Step by Step?
No.
No, I did not watch
the shit out of that show.
No, I did.
That's what this kid was on. That was his biggest thing.
No, I just, like, I remember, the only thing I know about Step by Step is the credit sequence.
Oh, yeah, that's one of the most famous theme songs of the 1990s.
Roller Coaster and all
that. That Full House, Urkel, they were all great.
I don't think I ever watched a single episode of it, though.
Yeah, I mean, you're not missing much. The two interesting things about this movie, one's great, one's a disappointment. One, produced by Tim Matheson. Tim Matheson, passion project. He spent years trying to get this off the ground.
Well, that was the thing is I saw it. I'm like, oh, that's just some guy who's also named Tim Matheson. That's
you're
going to
find that guy's IMDb, and it's going to be Tim Matheson, parentheses, number 2 in Roman numerals. But no, it's actual Animal House. Tim Matheson wanted to adapt an American Zatoichi. It's great.
God bless him.
Yeah.
He gave me something.
Thank you, Tim Matheson. This movie's fucking awesome.
This movie was my Uncle Nick. I needed this movie.
Now, let me tell you the bad news, though.
Uh-oh.
They immediately tried to turn around a sequel that never materialized. Can you imagine?
I would love it.
Another round of this movie. You know what? You could still make this movie now. Rutger Hauer, you can make the sequel.
Yeah, do
it. He's still just wandering around.
He could bring that goddamn toy dinosaur to the gas station, like I said. And then maybe, I don't know, maybe there's some type of robbery.
He would have to, it would be like a new kid. Like, he would have to be, like, training a kid.
I would prefer you're still running around for whatever reason. Maybe Terry O'Quinn is murdered.
Sure.
Oh, you know,
and yeah. It turns out it's like a crooked army colonel or something like that.
Oh, yeah.
Someone from their old division.
Played by Powers Booth.
Yes!
Or Michael Ironside.
Either
no,
or.
It's always Powers Booth. It's almost always Powers
until,
Booth.
Until Powers Booth says no, and then it's Michael Ironside.
Then it's Michael Ironside.
Because that's a definite yes. Now, who's recommending this movie?
Oh, I am, definitely. You should see this immediately.
I think it kind of goes without saying for me as well. Chris Cabin,
absolutely.
What do you say? Oh, yeah. This is a great movie.
It's a good movie.
What a fantastic time. What a fantastic 80-some-odd minutes.
We had so much fun with it, we couldn't even, you know, we couldn't remember it.
In a way, it's all just a blur of swords, guts, and kicking ass.
And that's also a credit to the movie because we were absorbed into it, having fun with it, and we weren't really thinking about, oh, we got to talk about it.
Yeah, I wasn't sitting here writing down endless plot points in my phone so I remember the movie. I was enjoying it. Like, I was caught up enjoying this movie. Several points, I was like, oh, fuck, we're doing an episode on this. Look alive, asshole.
Yeah.
You know, I, oh, my God, what fun. What great fun, Blind Fury. And it's like, if you've only seen that little internet clip of a kid just getting the rock spit in his face, that's only the beginning.
Oh, yeah. That's just half the story right there.
Half the story?
Okay.
An eighth, maybe. Yeah. I think it's closer.
A little pebble.
That's the fantastic Blind Fury from 1989, directed by Philip Noyce. If you want to get a hold of us, check out our website, whmpodcast.com. Check out the other shows on the network. Visit SideshowNetwork.tv. Like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. We're at WHM Podcast. If you have not got the Gilbert Gottfried episode yet, please go download that. We had a fantastic time chatting with him a couple weeks ago. It was a lot of fun. Right into the mailbag, weallhatemovies@gmail.com. Have you seen this movie? Is this one of the greatest American Ninja movies of all time? I think so. Sorry, Michael Dudikoff and American Ninja and all that nonsense.
Oh, man, he's going to take that hard.
I know, I'm sorry. Well, that fourth movie, there's a weird pedophile villain in it.
Yeah,
it creeps
me out.
Oh, yeah, he's like licking little boys' faces and stuff. It's fucked up. Yeah.
Stay tuned.
It just might be a stay tuned.
Yeah,
it's been a while since I've seen American Ninja 4, which is something no one should say ever. It's either I haven't seen it or, yeah, I saw it, who cares? But I'm like, oh, I ought to rewatch that. Yeah, licking faces. Clue for next week's episode, basketball. The clue for next week's episode is basketball.
And you know what? I'm just going to say it's the Basketball Diaries.
Spoiler alert. We're riffing on the Basketball Diaries.
I kid, of course.
It's
not the Basketball
Diaries. So funny.
So tune in next week where we might be making fun of the Basketball Diaries.
Possibly.
Until then, I'm Andrew Jupin.
Chris Cabin.
Eric Siska.
Take it easy.